brought to you by Penguin.
What is Free Speech? By Farah Dabboivala. Read by Matthew Spencer. Introduction. What is the history of free speech? And why should anyone care? I'd never thought about it myself until a few years ago, when a book I had written was translated into Chinese, and I was invited to mainland China to speak about it. The book was a history of sexual attitudes, and I was used to readers around the world responding to it in different ways. But this time, something else happened too. Though my contract prohibited any changes, the translation was censored. When the proofs arrived, I noticed that various things were missing. It turned out that an editor had removed them because, in his view, they were not appropriate. When I pushed back, the editor-in-chief became involved. Eventually, I was told by email that the publishers had referred my complaints to the officials at the Press and Publication Bureau in Nanjing, who had the final word. Those government censors agreed to reinstate a few of the cuts, but insisted on retaining the others. In China, censorship was hard to ignore. Every newspaper, broadcaster, and publishing house was owned by the state and expected to advance its ideological mission. Millions of invisible monitors sanitized all online behavior around the clock. As I traveled around, it dawned on me that I was witnessing something of a historical novelty. In the face of the internet, supposedly the most liberatory technology of free expression ever invented, the Chinese Communist Party seemed to have unleashed every tool previously devised to control opinion, as well as some totally new ones, and it was winning. This was not supposed to be happening. For decades, Western politicians had proclaimed that greater economic freedom would inevitably lead Chinese society to become more politically liberal too. At the start of the 21st century, they were equally certain that the spread of the World Wide Web would speed up this process. Across the globe, free speech was meant to advance hand in hand with free trade. It might be true that the Chinese were trying to tame the internet, American President Bill Clinton quipped in 2000, but that would never work. Good luck. That's sort of like trying to nail Jell-O to the wall. Yet I was not entirely surprised by what I found. My trip took place in 2015, when Hillary Clinton was widely presumed to be the likely next president of the United States. A decade earlier, the best-selling Chinese edition of her memoir had been secretly censored by its publishers, who had rewritten and removed many passages on politically sensitive topics. These actions were outrageous, Clinton said when she found out, but also increasingly futile. In the age of cyberspace, Chinese citizens would surely be ever more able to access the truth for themselves. I'd noticed this story because, as it happened, the same highly distinguished Chinese press that had done this to her book was now publishing mine. And then, on my final evening in China, I found myself having dinner with one of their senior editors. As we sat talking, it emerged that he was none other than the translator of Clinton's book, the very person who all those years ago had expurgated her text. I was transfixed and eagerly tried to pump him for information. What was it like to be a censor? I wanted to find out. How did one know where the line was between the permissible and the impermissible? What words and topics were off limits or not? What happened when the political situation changed and the guidelines altered? How did the officials at the Press and Publication Bureau communicate with him? Mainly by phone, it turned out. As my questions came tumbling out, he smiled condescendingly. We don't really use the word censor, he corrected me. When we work on a text, we prefer to think of it as tailoring. A little snip here, a cut there, some patching up, and look.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?